Welcome to Body and Culture Convos. This is Tina Foster. Thanks for being here. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting with, breathing with Narelle Carter Quinlan. Narelle is a photographer, writer, dancer, yogi, and walker of songlines who lives with scoliosis. Narelle has consciously explored the felt sense of the body's interior, its embodied relationship with spirit in form, and the living presence of the land all of her life. An Australian, she grew up by the sandstone cliffs and the sea of Coogee Beach. She has formal academic study and also has taught anatomy, histology, cellular pathology, clinical biochemistry, embryology, and did postgraduate research in spinal pathology, low back and pelvic pain, and the neurophysiology of postural control, particularly in the landscape of scoliosis. All of this offering her an intimate experiential knowledge of the body's inhabited geography, topography, and inner terrain. Narelle has a long and dedicated training as an elite level dancer, as well as formal rigorous training over nearly two decades in the Iyengar method of yoga. And these days, Narelle practices a more organic approach to movement and the practice of yoga, both within the experience of an asymmetric spine and in general, the body as felt, known, poetic place in communion with the greater ecology. As a photographer and writer, Narelle sees and hears the body as part of the breathing land, inspiring her students and audiences to join in participation with wholeness itself. Welcome to Body and Culture Convos, Narelle.
Oh, Tina, thank you so much for inviting me.
I'm really, really happy to be here. I am a fan of your work for quite some time. I should tell everyone, Narelle and I have been Instagram friends for a long time. And you should, if you like Instagram, you should check out her work there, even though it's not limited to images. And so after following you on Instagram for so long, it's nice to actually be with you. And so I'd like to begin with you telling us a little about what you call embodied terrain and saltwater song lines. These are two phrases that come up. I guess they're actually, it's not that they come up a lot in your work, they're principal in your work.
Yeah. Well, Embodied Terrain is my business name and Saltwater Songlines is the name of a project that is ongoing and lifelong. So Embodied Terrain is really the way that I experience the land as part of my own body. They're not separate things at all to me. I'm immersed. My tissues of my body and the tissues of the landscape don't only echo each other, they're part of each other. And to be in a place, to be in what I call country, or what we call here in Australia country, and experience that landscape touching your tissues on a visceral level is a deeply embodied experience of knowing. It's the only way really to know anything. So that's the embodied terrain component. It's actually what drove me to study anatomy in the first place. I wanted to learn what is it that I can feel in my body. I want to see these pictures. I want to know what the structure is that I'm actually encountering on a visceral level. That's something I wanted to do from a really small child. Saltwater Songlines really comes from my relationship with place, with my dad, in that he was a surf lifesaver and, he made sure I knew how to read the currents and read the tides and read the clouds and the weather conditions because my life depended on it when I was really little. And being a surf lifesaver, he'd put in enough dead bodies to not really want to have to worry about that with his little girl. So it's about reading reading that literal zone between high tide and low tide and walking, walking and listening to place. And that's what I've done all my life, and that's what I do in my arts practice and as a way of breathing. And so Saltwater Songlines is a long project. I walk around the planet listening.
Walking. Yes. Mm. So your work begins with just walking. And you talk about the Aboriginal word Dadiri. Am I saying that right? It means
Dadiri.
Dadiri. It means deep listening. And you say that that is a practice for which one shows up and walks and is immersed completely in the ecosystem. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, Dadiri, you don't actually have to walk. It's just it's about listening to country. It's about listening to the land in an undefended way and letting the sovereignty, the presence, the being of that land, beings of that land, commune with you, touch you.
And when you say commune with you, touch you, you mean not just externally, but internally, right?
Oh, absolutely. So there's this porosity, this complete bleed through of our presences mingling.
Yeah. So, you know, Narelle, the one thing that has struck me about your work, and particularly your images from watching them over the years on Instagram, is that these images of rock, sand, water, sky, grasses, plants, you know, all the things of the land. Sometimes it's more desert. Sometimes it's more it's trees. It, whatever it is, I always, or not always, but often find that there's that they look like microscopic images, and sometimes to the point that you can't tell. I have not been able to entirely tell whether I'm looking at a slide on a microscope or whether I'm looking at patterns on a rock, for example. And in your presentation at the 2020 Embodiment Conference, you say, and I'm paraphrasing, "My interior waterways, all the way down to my cellular tissues, mirrored in what I saw on the slides of a microscope." And you talked a lot about the microscopic to macroscopic patterns in nature, and you call those codes of consciousness. Tell us more about codes of consciousness.
Okay, thank you for asking me that question. Codes of consciousness is a phrase that I devised to try and explain what it was that I was both seeing and experiencing, often in sand patterns, sometimes in rocks, often on tree bark. And to me, they're a direct transmission of patterns, of frequency, of vibration and resonance from aspects of the land into our own, not only bodies, but into our own consciousness itself. And if you look at those images, and allow them to touch you, then it's as if you experience this direct encounter of knowing. It's unmistakable, it's undeniable. You don't have to translate it into language. And I often say as well, like codes of consciousness, yes, but a language without sound is what it is. So I see those patterns in the sand, as I've mentioned, and it's not like it's the symbols, you know, like we have letters when we're trying to communicate something in language. And yet, And yet there are these shapes, these patterns that are shifting constantly in sand. You know, they're gone all the time with the waves, but they're just, you walk along and you can't not be touched by this thing that's just boom, there. And it's as if source is saying, do you remember? Do you remember? Do you remember who you really are? Boom. And so you get it. And I walk on the sand and I hear, you know, the ancestors, or I hear source just like, now. And I'm like, now? Now? It's a piece of sand. Now. So you capture it and it's a code.
Yeah. So these codes of consciousness in nature, reflecting, mirroring back into you, your own codes of consciousness. So it's a way of drawing a human being back into the natural world to remember that we aren't separate and that we are, to use your word, in communion all the time. And so the frequencies that we make as we think, speak, move are echoed and maybe in some cases are adverse to the frequencies around us in nature. What do you think about that?
It's not so much about nature. Yes, it is definitely about that, but and also it's about the greater presence of who and what we truly are. So it's more a spiritual type communion. It's this connection of the multiverse with Earth. Yeah, it's a direct knowing of that incarnate. Yes, we're a multidimensional being. Yes, we're a spiritual being, and we are incarnate. So it's that linkage.
Consciousness incarnate.
Indeed.
Yes. I love to talk about these kinds of things. I think about these things like you a lot, but it's really not that easy to talk about these things. The words fail, words dissolve, but we know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do. Hence the images, hence the dance, hence the sounding.
Yes, other ways of speaking. So I'd like to move now to your growing up, which has so much to do with your work, and also there's so many great stories in your early biography. You grew up in Gadigal country. You describe it as the sandstone cliffs, rock pools, teal blue waters, and sea plant gardens of Kuji. Am I saying that right, or is it Kuji? And yeah, so, it surrounds. Hmm. Yeah. So I like that description. Can you tell us just where, if we're visualizing a map of Australia, where is Gadigal country?
Okay, so Gadigal country is, if you look at a map of Australia and you find yourself toward New South Wales on the east coast, about halfway along, so Victoria's down the bottom and Queensland's up the top, and Sydney is on the east coast of New South Wales. So Coogee is in Sydney, and it's just south of the harbour, of Sydney Harbour, and it has these... they're fairly small, but to a little girl, they seemed high, these sandstone cliffs. And does that orient you enough to how I would find that on a map? Yep. Okay.
Yes.
So the original people there are from the Gadigal Nation. And we say on rather than in. So I was born on Gadigal country.
Okay. So. Born on. And then here in Gadigal country, your father, who, as you said, was a surf lifesaver. Here we call that a lifeguard. Surf lifesaver sounds so much better. Lifeguard than lifeguard. Your father would take you on these bushwalks, and he'd ask you to put your hands on a rock and to listen. And you say that it was almost like he would almost disappear. And I'm paraphrasing again, but you said there was this complete porosity, this complete immersion of his body into the land, and I wanted it. And you said that in these times when he would put, ask you to put your hand on the rock and listen, he would say, put your hand on the stone, listen, where do you feel it? And most importantly, what will you do with that?
Yeah, well, that stone actually, that's on Coogee Beach. So that wasn't in the bush itself. That was right on the edge of the cliff. And so there's these little pockets there, and we'd stand on the edge of the cliff, or we'd go into these little pockets, and that's where that happened. And I was four, and he would say that thing. You know, he'd say it in different ways, and he'd say it, you know, a couple of different times. But it was that, you know, put Narelle, put your hand here. Yeah? What do you feel? Where do you feel that in your body? Where does it move through you? Which places in your body does it touch? What can you hear? Where do you hear that in your body? And then he'd look at me, his eyes would meet me, but in a really combination of sparkle and challenge, most important, what will you do with that? So it's like, it's all very well to have these experiences, but what are you going to actually do with that?
I love that so much. It's so dreamy, but it also is so poetic and beautiful to think of a little girl having that kind of experience as a kind of initiation and just being introduced to the land that way. And once I heard you tell that story, it really helped me to understand what your work was about. And I wonder if you could just give us an example of, hypothetical, or maybe you have an actual memory of what it would be like to put your hand on a rock or something, and then you say, listen, like, what might you hear when you listen? And then where you feel it, where might you feel it? And then what does it touch? Where might it touch? And then, you know, what you might feel you want to do with that, just so that we have more of a sense of what that's all about.
For me, when I put my hand on a rock, I'll stick with rock because that's what we're talking about in this now. When I use the word listening, I'm not talking about the auditory sense. I'm talking about the felt vibrational frequency sense. And so it's kind of like, as much as I say language without sound, it's like listening without auditory waves. Where do you feel that pulse through your body? You know, if you put your hand on a rock, your surface of your palm of your hand on the body of the rock, where do you feel that conversation between the two of your beings flow through your organism? What tissues does it touch? For me, sandstone touches my blood vessel linings. It touches my heart. It touches my skin. It might be different for somebody else, but that's where I feel it in my body. I feel it through the fascia. And so it's about me communing with the essence, the frequency of that being that is the rock, and listening to what it is that passes between us.
Thank you. I feel like this is something that children are especially gifted at. As an adult hearing this, it might sound kind of strange or extremely esoteric. You know, that's because it's in words and it's coming through the intellect. But children who haven't cultivated all that or been separated from their intuition and their bodies and their connection to the earth, they're still, they're not as self-conscious. So that was really a gift to give that to you at that time.
Oh, absolutely. I felt like my father gave me my true education. Education meaning, the root of it means to be present at the birth of. And I'm 61, yet he was present. Men weren't present at the births back then. but he was just outside the room, thank you very much. And he was the first human being, once I was caught, so to speak, to hold me. My mum had been in labour 3 days and she was exhausted. And my dad was the first person who met my eyes, the first person to welcome me onto the planet.
Thanks for sharing that. So you say education. I like this connection between education and birth. I think if we thought, if in our own educational systems, we kept that in mind when we were making our decisions about how to educate our children, we might actually keep them closer to their original nature than if we, then the things we actually do to children, which is basically put them through a process, you know, systems and processes to separate them from nature effectively and from their body.
It's an imposition, and I'll probably say something controversial here. It's a violation.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree. Controversial or not. And since we're on the topic of education, we can move now to a more formal, conventional version of it. If you don't mind, you received a formal initiation from an Indigenous elder and then followed up by an apprenticeship with a relation from his family. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, okay. Thanks for opening that out. So I was living in the Blue Mountains west of Sydney. So if you visualize that same map and you drive 2 hours inland and up, that's the Blue Mountains. In Aboriginal culture, it's a place where you don't stay. I stayed for 10 years, but it's considered a passing through place. You go there and you experience deep transformation and whatever it is you need, and then you move on. What happened for me as I was learning to listen to the land more deeply even, and making gem elixirs. And I worked with this teacher who taught me to listen to the stones. I was making gemstone jewelry. I had a business called Turquoise Starfish, and I was making gem elixirs and gemstone jewelry. And her uncle lived up in the Northern Territory, so the top, very top part of Australia, mm-hmm. in the middle. And unfortunately, I don't remember what nation he came from, but he contacted her. He didn't know me from a bar of soap. He could just feel it. And he just contacted her and said, hey, this person that you're working with, she's listening to the land and she's doing something with the body and the land. And she's almost there. She's almost got it, but she's missing an important piece. And I need to give her this initiation, but I can't get down there. So will you do it for me by proxy? And he told her what to do. And we went to this place in the mountains and by a waterfall. And she gave me this initiation, which was really from him. And then I continued to work with her on and off for about a decade. And there was an overlap there, though, where I worked with her teacher at the time, who became my teacher, and that's Adam Davis, who passed about 18 months ago. And I worked with him for 30 years.
Now tell us more about Adam Davis.
So Adam had work that he called, at first he was calling it Initiates and Ascending Masters, and then that was part of something that was had an overarching umbrella called the All One Foundation. And he ran spiritual trainings and retreats. And I did a training. I did many, many, many trainings with him over the decades, many initiations. And his primary training was called Openings. And the training that I spent the most time with him in, which was an ongoing training, was transformation training. So I'm a transformer, the real deal. There's only 50 of us in the world that he initiated, and there's one in the United States, but the rest of us are actually in Australia. I think a couple might be in the UK now.
Tell us what it means to be a transformer.
So transformation facilitator works with what it is that you're wanting, like what it is you're really wanting. Because if you handle what it is you're really wanting, you're handling what it is you came here to do on the planet. It's completely different to healing. Healing works with what you don't want. Transformation is direct, clear, vertical line to source. Boom.
Okay.
Work with a transformer and you'll get it.
Yeah. Okay. And also another thing about your upbringing, you lived with an Aboriginal foster sister. And you describe that experience as profoundly, painfully. She had been removed from her family and culture. My family loved and cherished her, and together we endured and fought many racial abuses, inequalities, injustices, and discrimination based on the colored pigments of our skins. What would you like to share about that experience?
I was 12 when my sister came to live with us, and she was 9. And our government had a policy of removing children from their families if they were from what's often called mixed blood. And whilst my sister wasn't specifically from what's usually called the stolen generation, she had indeed experienced abuse within her family. Nonetheless, there was the carryover of that policy in ways that are confusing for all involved, but nonetheless, her and her family, her siblings, her cousins were taken from their aunts, their uncles, their extended family. That they lived in an extended family group and put into holding homes, separated, and then parceled out into foster care. And I watched the profound dislocation from country and from her family that my sister experienced, and her forced attempts to integrate into our society, which at school it was really difficult, extremely difficult. This is like 50 years ago, but I'd be in class and my teacher would look out the window and say to me, "Oh, Narelle, you better go out and help your sister. She's out again." And her teacher would put her out in the playground sitting under the hot sun because she'd done some small minor misdemeanor, and her teacher did this often, just cast her out of the classroom and made her sit outside. It was very hard at school for her.
Heartbreaking. Yeah. Heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was difficult in many ways. Just walking down the street was difficult. We got so many racial slurs walking down the street. My mother was spat on by men because they would say to her, "Oh, what have you been up to, hey, with a black fella." It was awful, absolutely awful, in front of my sister and myself.
Oh, Narelle, thank you for sharing that. That is, with what we're going through in our world right now, what's going on in the United States, I know that what you're saying, even though it's in some way, quote unquote, different because it's in Australia, it's a different time, it's with a different, it's with an Aboriginal person rather than the brown and black people that we have here in the United States who are from everywhere and have, we all, come from these different lineages, and we all find ourselves here and now. And yet there's so much that is different and similar about what it is we're going through. History doesn't just repeat itself. To use a common expression, I think back on the patterns that you talk about in the sand. And the other mention in another part of our conversation about being separated from body. And here you're telling the story of being a person being separated from their people. And, and that had to also bring a separation from her body. And
I'm not sure about that. Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Go on. Tell me about that.
What I experienced of my sister, and I will call her by her first name. I'm sure she'd be fine with me calling her by her first name. What I experienced of Joyce is when we went to dance together, you know, we'd go to dance class together or, you know, individual sessions. She was extraordinary. Of course she was extraordinary. Her dance, her sense of her body, her power in her body, her capacity to inhabit herself in rhythm and line and form in relationship with sound, you know, that we call music, was profound. Her whole body would come alive in relationship with gravity and, you know, that symphony of sound. So I don't know that she lost her connection to her body at all. And often she would sit out in the backyard and she'd make stuff with the rocks and the grasses. And I don't think she lost her connection with body.
Yeah. I think I misspoke. Not her connection with her body, but that she could feel a loss of connection with her family in her body and the place where she was living. Yes. Her body somehow had to register that. But I love how you just described your Aboriginal foster sister Joyce from that embodied perspective. It was so beautiful. And I'm wondering now how she might have affected your artwork and all the work you do now. Is she influenced there?
I think she is. I think, you know, we shared a room for a year, and when you're 12 going into 13, that's a pretty formative time. And I'd been an only child up until then. And to have that resonance of that presence of her in the room, and it impacted me on a vibrational level.
Thank you. So going back to your images and work for a bit, something else I was struck by in your presentation at the 2020 Embodiment Conference was your presentation was primarily, it was, you might say, multimedia. There were images, there was story, and there was also spoken word. And of course, when I say spoken word, I mean that your voice was a part of it. And after a certain amount of time of listening to your words and your voice and the story, I started to feel, and this might sound strange in words, but I started to have a felt sense of the patterns, the visual patterns I was seeing in your images of rock and sand and bark and so forth. I could feel them in my body almost as a vibration. And I could also, I could feel them as a vibration in your voice. As you would draw an image up, it was almost as if your voice started to transmit the pattern in that particular image. It was amazing. And there was also a rhythm of the visual images. There was a visual rhythm that was mirrored in the rhythm and cadence of your voice modulation, and also just the symbolism of your words. And I really loved the experience because it took me deeper into communion with myself, but I was also in communion with you. And I was also in, you know, communion with the people at that conference. And of course, we were all in communion with Source.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you experienced that. For me, that's also how it is when I dance, in that it's the same. It's transmission of frequency.
Yeah. So would you like to talk a little bit about movement and dance in a body with what you called a significant scoliosis?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I'm not sure where to begin with that one. That's kind of a big question. But okay, so look, when I was four, I knew my body was asymmetric. I could feel it. I've practiced yoga since I was four. I just didn't know that it was called yoga. I didn't know there was this thing called yoga. You know, I was just doing it and made the shapes, et cetera, on the floor. And but I could feel the imbalance on the left and right-hand side. And I could feel the energy would move through one side differently to the other. But when I was 13, I don't even remember why we went to the doctor, but we're at the doctor anyway. And there was a locum. It wasn't our usual doctor. And he looked at my spine and he went into this major panic and decided I needed surgery to fix my spine, my crooked spine. And it's just like, I said to him, that's not happening. I'm a dancer. And I had contracts lined up already at this stage, you know, ready to go dance in Paris, ready to go dance on Broadway. You know, those contracts weren't going to take effect till I was 15, but it's just like, no, I don't think so. And he said, oh, well, you'll just have to forget about that because we need to put these rods in your spine. And it's like, try no. So I went off to a different, or my parents took me to a different consultant, and he just said, Narelle, never stop dancing, never stop moving, never stop doing yoga. You're going to be fine. And okay, you know, I was 13, so I was entering a rapid growth phase. Scoliosis can progress unpredictably, quickly, dramatically. And so he watched me every 3 months, and I was fine. However, when I reached adulthood after the end of my second pregnancy, my thoracic curve was 47 degrees, which is pretty substantial. So I upped and got a lot more specific, precise, penetrative and incisive with my yoga and got it back to 35 degrees. And so, you know, does it affect me in dance? Yes, I had low back pain all the time when I was training as an elite dancer. But I just thought it was because I was doing all the training. I didn't think, oh yeah, this is my scoliosis. And if I did, I just thought, well, you know, I'm just going to keep dancing and I don't have back pain at all anymore.
Wow. Did you ever dance your way to Broadway in Paris?
No, not officially, not in that at that age, but I've performed in New York City, I've performed in Europe, I've performed in the UK as an adult, but that's more with my images. So as a sort of like what you saw on the embodiment conference, so images, spoken word, but also the moving body.
Okay. So you also are writing 3 books at the same time right now?
I am.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's quite the journey. So there's one book that is my life's work in yoga and scoliosis, yoga and the asymmetric spine. And, you know, that work, that body of work draws in embryology, not just anatomy. I always think embryology is the new anatomy.
Yes.
So it draws in embryology because that's where it all starts, you know, and it draws in the deep relationship with country, with the tissues of the land and the tissues of the body. So it marries this precision that you need to impact a structural scoliosis. You need to work very, very clearly and yeah, with precision. You really just do, and that's all there is to it. But if you do that, you know, add forever and ever, amen, then all you will get is a very dry, rigid body. You need to bring in the fluid system. You need to bring in the relationship with country. You need to bring in developmental movement patterns. You need to bring in embryology. So that's what this book is about. Another book is a memoir called Australian Woman, American Man. And it's about my last marriage, which was traumatic and abusive and racist. I was called a pathetic Australian. Many things about my country and my embodiment, in fact, were maligned. And this book speaks to not just that relationship, but the ways in which parts of that relationship echo the ways we relate with the planet, the colonization that took place in that relationship echoed in the colonization of the way that we relate with other cultures, other peoples, the planet itself, the plunder of resources. There are many, many echoes that were that form. So I lived a microcosm of a macrocosmic patterning, and that's what that book is about, really. Holds a mirror up to that. The third book is a Saltwater Songlines book, and it's not actually really a book. It's a series of books and audio resources. I don't think that a book these days stands alone as a written text, and I don't want it to be that way. And so even the Yoga for Scoliosis book is a multimedia project. There's a lot of film and audio that will be in that project as well. There's a publisher I'm working with who's really happy to support that. And that platform, and the even Australian Woman, American Man, there'll be film. There's already film component that I'm working on with that. And certainly Saltwater Songlines has many, many multimedia aspects in still image, moving image of the places in country, moving image of the body, audio. There's a series of kids' books, and yeah, on and on.
Wow. And you, I wanted to ask you about mentoring. I'm also a mentor, and I love mentoring, and I love the particular type of relationship that occurs in mentoring. And you do mentoring too, so I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about mentoring in general and then your particular mentoring offerings.
Okay. Mentoring in general. You know, Tina, it's a lot like teaching yoga in that it's a sacred relationship. You're privileged to be there. And it's a conversation of listening. Again, it always comes back to listening. How can it not? And so I support people in many ways, really, whether it's through yoga or whether it's through arts practice or whether it's more as a transformation thing, although that's a separate sort of thing. Loosely, it comes under the umbrella of mentoring, but it's not. They're transformation sessions. Mentoring, people come and they do a block of sessions and I listen to what is it that you're wanting? What's between the lines here? And sometimes, I've had people who are authors who want help pulling a proposal together for a publisher, or people who are working. I've had a filmmaker, a couple of dance choreographers who want to help with translating their work to film, or work on a live project, site-specific. Yeah, so that's that piece. And then there's the mentoring program with Saltwater Songlines that's coming up. So there's that. Do you want me to talk about that?
Yes,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah, okay. So it's kind of a baby program in that it's not the full Monty, which is evolving and developing at the moment. And because I'm really writing these books this year, I don't have time to develop this program more deeply yet. That will happen later. But there's a program in June and July, actually, for people to walk through some of these different ecosystems that, yes, they're coastal, butt and also coasts are really the interface of the relationship of the land and the sea. It's an ongoing relationship where the land and the sea are completely committed with each other. They listen to each other all the time. And, you know, the ocean is not this unbounded thing. It's held by a seafloor. It has coasts, and that intimate communion and intimate relationship of ocean and land and the listening that happens in that place, the different types of coasts, and some of those tissues of rock and sand and water that are echoed in the body itself. That's what this program is about. It's walking through some of those places in the body. People have an arts practice of sort, whether it's a formal professional practice or whether it's just a personal practice of, well, you know, I go for a walk on the beach, or, well, I go for a walk in the desert, or I go for a walk in the forest, or wherever it is. It doesn't matter where it is. And we work with that in the program. So they have full mentoring sessions and they have their own project.
Is this something you do with them remotely, or are you going to be doing it in person? Will they be coming to you?
No, it's remote. So at the moment, there are people joining from Ireland, from the US, from Australia, and probably from Europe.
Okay, that sounds great. And is that on your website? So we could check out that out and sign up if we wanted to from there?
Yes, you can. You can't just sign up. It's an application process by interview, because we have to meet each other some way.
Yes.
Is this what you really want? Who are you and who am I? And there are only 12 spaces available in that program anyway, and it's half full at the moment. But yes, it's on my website underneath the mentoring nav tab.
Okay. And I should just, this will all be on the webpage, but Norelle's website is embodiedterrain.com. And so you'll be able to find that there. All right. So Norelle, what else are you up to these days? Anything else you want to share?
I live part-time on a sailboat and I love it. I love it, Tina. I love feeling the movement of the water underneath my body as this vessel cradles it and holds me like a womb. And I get to walk on the beach, like long, long walks, you know, 10, 12 kilometers. And that holds me. That's my anchor, actually. My boat is, well, it's not my boat, it's my ex-husband's boat. That holds me and anchors me. And so I'm on that boat 3 days a week and listening, always listening to tides and winds and water.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for that. I have always wanted to be on a sailboat to go sailing. I grew up, boats and water was everywhere and, doing all kinds of recreation in boats and in water, but I never got the chance to be on a sailboat. And I live here in San Francisco. We have sailboats on the bay and I still haven't managed to get on the sailboat. I know any number of people who live on sailboats. Still, I have never been on a sailboat. I have been on a sailboat actually, but I mean out on the actual ocean. Yeah. So just the idea of laying in the sailboat and being rocked to sleep by the sea sounds amazing.
It's like, and being under sail too, it's like the water and the wind and the vessel and your body become one.
Yes. Oh, I love it. Thank you. So to close this conversation, I just wanted to invite you to read a passage from your website. It's just a few paragraphs, but what I like about it is the way that it sort of sums up all that you are and your work and all that you offer. And maybe even if there's a message that you are sending to people that might be there too, it also gives a sense of what it's like to work with you. So whenever you're ready, just begin. Okay.
Hmm. Once upon a time, there was a little girl who daily walked the sandstone cliffs of a Sydney beach, knowing home. Sky, salt, rock. Immersing in water, knowing that she knew, that she knew, that she knew. Embodied, you are. Your very presence sings through your skin, fluid tissues and bones, through your spine, through your consciousness. Yet you forget. Sometimes your back hurts. Sometimes it's something else, another place in the country of your body. Sometimes it's your spirit. I help you inhabit your body. I make pictures of the living land, and together I help you retrace the paths to the places where you too know. The place where your body moves with fluidity, ease, and grace, a spine of strength and fluency, poise. The place where you remember yourself, your body, and psyche as part of the greater ecology, whole. One.
Narelle, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today on body and culture convos. Your entire self and body of work is just so dead on for what my vision of this body and culture convo project is.
Thank you so much for inviting me and for the care that you've taken in preparing this.
Thank you for that. I really enjoyed looking through all of your materials and listening to you. And I'm sure there was so much I didn't get through at all. But, you know, I want to invite everyone to check out Narelle's website. Again, it's embodiedterrain.com. There you can find more information about her work, including lots of her images. And there is a link to the recording of her presentation at the 2020 Embody Conference, and information about mentoring and her writing is there. It's an embodied treasure trove. All right. Saying goodbye now. Thank you, Narelle. Thanks, everyone, for listening.